Excuse me, can I have everyone's attention, please? We'd like to get this started in just a few minutes. No feedback today, that's terrific. A couple things just to advise you of. On Monday, Feng Chi Sun, more popular and known around the club as Dr. Chi, will be talking about his memoir of growing up in a squatter village in Diamond Hill. That's on Monday, so please come to that if you can. And tomorrow, Claire Hollingworth, the doyen of the FCC, turns 98, and there's going to be a brief birthday reception for her at 6 o'clock in her bunker. Today, I'm very happy to welcome Terry Duffy, Executive Chairman of the CME Group, and his team, joined by one of his board members, the former Speaker of the House of Representatives, Dennis Hastert. Welcome all to the FCC. This is Terry's not just first trip to Hong Kong, but also Asia, and I think you'll be hearing later that he's going to have many more trips on a much more frequent basis in future. I owe Terry an apology, and I forgot to mention this when we were speaking earlier. When I was announcing this event earlier this week, I mentioned that we're going to have the chairman of the China Mercantile Exchange here. Now, exactly. That's what China's going to call it after they buy it. but they haven't bought it yet. And for all I know, Terry is going to tell us that he's just bought Hong Kong Exchanges and Clearing and also the Shanghai Stock Exchange, because after all, the CME Group does already own the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, the Chicago Board of Trade, and NYMEX. Terry has been executive chairman of the CME Group since July 2007. Previously, he was chairman of CME and CME Holdings. And in fact, his relationship with the exchange goes back to 1981. Terry, thank you very much for coming to the FCC today.
Well, Tom, careful. Almost lost somebody early. Tom, thank you very much for that very kind introduction and the new name of the CME Group. Everybody back home will be very excited to know that we are now the Chinese Mercantile Exchange. I think that I've been trying to get over to this part of the world for so long, people will think that I so fell in love with it that I did change the name of the CME, but we did not. It's still the CME Group, and I want to thank you all for having me today. Tom recognized my dear friend and colleague, Speaker Hastert, but I really appreciate him being here with me today as he's traveled throughout Asia with me. And he's a great asset to the CME. As you know, he is the longest-serving Speaker of the United States House of Representatives in the Republican Party. He's a great leader, and he is looked at with great favor from both sides of the aisle. So it's great to have the Speaker here. I want to recognize the President of the CME Group, Mr. Pupinder Gill. Mr. Gill is originally from Singapore, been in Chicago for many, many years, and I think a lot of you already know him. But Gill is kind of the do-everything man at the CME Group, and he was instrumental in making certain that I came over here to see the importance of Asia. And being here just for a very short while, Tom was ever so correct. I will be making many more trips here because it is a very dynamic and exciting place. So, Gill, I want to thank you for your leadership. And I want to thank Anita Liske, who is also with me from our Corporate Communications Department, and C.F. Wong. CF heads up the CME Group Asian team, and he has done an amazing job putting together an office that's based out of Singapore but has folks here in Hong Kong and also in Tokyo. I was asked to speak about a few things, but first let me say I'm honored to be here to speak to the Foreign Correspondents Club of Hong Kong. I was asked to speak about how we could prevent another financial crisis of the magnitude we all experienced over the past year from occurring again. Given the turmoil we've been through in global financial markets, I would like to give you my perspective as chairman of a global exchange that weathered the storm extremely well. While I can't claim to have all the answers, I do know that the safety and soundness offered by exchange-traded and cleared risk management products such as ours will play an increasingly important role in the solution of the problem. Business Week recently reported the worst U.S. recession since 1930s has been a cruel way to rebalance the world economy, but it's working. Without a doubt, the financial crisis has created a global shift in economic priorities. The need for effective risk management has moved to the forefront. It is worth pointing out that there are some segments of our financial market system that provide a place of shelter from the most damaging parts of the global economic crisis. Futures and options markets are among them. They functioned flawlessly, providing liquidity, transparency, and central counterparty clearing services that continued to work throughout the crisis. Our market model is made up of a sophisticated system of checks and balances that have proven to be extremely effective in preventing counterparty credit risk. Indeed, the exchange has many of the mechanisms needed to assist in fixing some of the financial market problems and restore trust among investors. That is why we feel obligated to speak up in the face of unprecedented level of attention being paid to the financial services market in terms of legislation and regulation in the United States and elsewhere, which I will touch on in more detail in a moment. Let me first give you a brief overview of the CME. Today, we are the largest and most diverse financial exchange in the world. We offer hedging and risk management products on agricultural commodities, foreign currencies, government debt, short-term interest rates, stock indexes, energy, metals, and a wide array of other instruments. I like to think of us as a large reinsurance company. Our products are used by banks, commercial enterprises, asset and liability managers, swap dealers, pension and retirement systems, mutual funds, and even insurance companies to manage their many different economic risks that flow from their commercial and investment activities. Just to give you a sense of the scale, last year we facilitated the trading of more than 3 billion futures and options contracts, representing an underlying value of more than $1 quadrillion. This is nearly 20 times the global GDP. Even though we are headquartered in Chicago, our business is truly global. We operate local telecommunication hubs in Asia, Europe, and Latin America that directly connect customers to CME's Globex, the most distributed electronic trading platform and network in the world, which operates 24/7 and serves customers in more than 85 countries around the world. In particular, we have a long-standing presence in Asia, and it continues to be a vital market for us. Our regional headquarters for Asia, as I said earlier, is located in Singapore, with team members in Hong Kong and Tokyo as well. Our telecommunication hubs in Singapore is the second largest by volume next to our London hub, and our Seoul hub that we just opened last year in April. These hubs are telecommunication hubs, which allows customers to give direct connectivity into them, bring their trades right into Chicago at a lower cost, and also they get the speed and efficiency as if they were right in the city of Chicago. In addition, we have established strategic alliances with the Korean Exchange, the Bourse of Malaysia, that will allow us to further expand our presence in Asia to serve our customers here. In search for solutions to the global financial crisis, our industry, as well as governments, will likely debate regulatory and structural issues for some time. But there is one thing that has crystallized as a result of the recent events. That is critical importance of understanding and managing counterparty risk. Markets are built on a number of pillars. None is stronger than the pillar of confidence. Yes, there are many other supports that make up a solid marketplace: transparency, liquidity, integrity, efficiency, and fairness, just to name a few. But the foundation that builds and holds marketplaces together comes from knowing that your transaction is free from credit or counterparty default risk. That comes from central clearing. Always the cornerstone of futures markets, clearing is now poised to play a significant role in the over-the-counter markets as well. Indeed, a senior U.S. Treasury official said recently that government officials are looking at the exchange-traded futures market as a model for approving other areas of the financial system, including the over-counter derivatives and Treasury repurchase agreements. The acting Assistant Secretary for Financial Markets called attention to the strength of the futures market during the credit crisis and contrasted the resiliency of the Eurodollar's futures market to its over-the-counter counterparts. In addition to being the world's largest derivatives marketplace, CME Group is also the largest derivative clearing organization in the world. We hold more than $100 billion of collateral to support the transactions that are being made in our markets. Twice a day, we move between $6 and $10 billion of funds to and from market participants. No customer has ever lost a penny as a result of a clearing member default at the CME Group. That includes the Great Depression up through this most recent economic failure. Our system works because we operate a zero debt or twice daily mark-to-market system. Surprisingly, this time-tested system is unique and has not yet been widely applied to the over-the-counter market, which is five times larger than the exchange-traded futures and options markets. By working closely with both the dealer community and the buy-side participants, we believe a company like CME Group can develop clearing solutions that will allow the OTC markets to function smoothly again and restore investor confidence in our financial system. While we don't necessarily believe clearing should be mandated, we do believe the events of the past year has made clearing more attractive part of the value chain investors are definitely looking for. We already have a highly successful, rapidly growing OTC facility, and it's called CME Clearport, which has been effectively clearing OTC energy transactions for years. CME Clearport offers OTC market participants the same financial safeguards and sophisticated risk management found in our exchange-traded products. Clients on both sides of the market have told us the need to use their capital more efficiently. They want to mitigate their counterparty risk and access stronger customer protections. We think we can provide greater flexibility by preserving choice of execution at the same time providing the added security of clearing. Volumes in oil, gas, and power contracts cleared through our facility have increased dramatically as institutions continue to seek a safe haven from economic uncertainty. CME Clearport volume increased 39% in 2008 and 31% for the first half in 2009. Even though the CME Clearport today is predominantly available for energy and metals contracts, we anticipate expanding the benefits of Clearport to other asset classes, thereby increasing the reach of our services in the OTC arena. Regardless of how OTC transactions come to us, CME Clearport provides market participants with a number of significant benefits, including eliminating their bilateral credit risk by serving as a strong central counterparty, lowering their costs by allowing them to allocate capital and more effectively as a result of multilateral netting and portfolio margining. Bottom line, our central counterparty clearing capabilities, coupled with the fact that we tend to provide more information about market participants and guard against systemic risk in ways that aren't available in less regulated segments of the overall financial services market. This leaves us well positioned to play a significant role in restoring confidence to the marketplace. Ironically, in the wake of the financial market meltdown, an increasing number of regulators and legislators are calling for regulatory and structural changes in the listed derivatives markets, particularly in the U.S. and Europe, all of which will impact markets globally. So, as we start to bring the safety and soundness of central clearing to new markets, it is vital we guard against the risk of over-regulation. This is particularly important to U.S. leaders and legislators focusing on key issues, including position limits, exchange trading and central counterparty clearing services, over-the-counter instruments, and the role of speculators in the marketplace. We try to be a leading voice on these topics to ensure that policymakers understand the critical function exchanges and central counterparty clearing systems provide. There also is a move to limit the amount of speculators that could trade energy in commodity markets because certain people have a misperception of the role of speculators in the marketplace. We have taken a stance and proposed hard limits for our energy products, which is outlined recently in our recently released white paper that garnered significant media attention. As highlighted in the white paper, we support the mission of the Commodity Futures Trading Commission to provide regulatory certainty to all markets and ensure that energy markets can operate more effectively. To be effective, however, regulatory parity must be given to all markets under the CFTC's jurisdiction. Imposing hard limits on energy products must be delicately balanced with the need to ensure that such limits do not have a detrimental effect on the market. We cannot and should not force participants away from the best regulated markets to less regulated or even unregulated dark pools of opaque transactions. We believe that our carefully designed recommendations will address perceived concerns and provide a solution for those seeking to impose hard limits while avoiding any unintended harm to U.S. markets and their users. As in the United States, there are changes occurring in other regions of the world. The European Central Bank and European Parliament are taking a new view, as are Asian regulators. Our vision for the future is to help to facilitate a healthy cash market alongside a healthy exchange and OTC market. They drive each other. They are complementary and mutually supportive. We also see huge potential for our business to serve new and emerging markets. As the global marketplace expands, CME Group is poised to participate in and benefit from that growth. In addition to our strategic partnerships in Korea and Singapore, we are actively working to develop new relationships in both India and China. Ultimately, the aggregation of assets in these regions of the world will rival those of Europe and North America. In summary, I believe we are about to enter a new era of global financial markets where market integrity and central counterparty clearing safeguards will take on an even greater importance. We have a unique opportunity ahead to reshape financial markets for the 21st century, and we fully intend to continue our leadership position in this effort. I want to thank you so very much for having me at your club today, and I look forward to answering all your questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Terry. We've got 20, even 25 minutes for questions. Can I just remind everybody, please identify yourself when you ask your question, and also if you know who won the St. Louis-LA baseball game this morning before it was so rudely cut off, Mr. Duffy would like to know that as well. Right here, please.
Alan Mercer, Harmony Capital. Terry, could you just elaborate for a poor, dumb, ignorant person like me what you mean by hard limits in energy futures contracts and options?
Absolutely. At the NYMEX exchange, which is wholly owned by the CME Group, we have what are called accountability levels. So we set these levels, which they're accountability, so they're not hard. We only have hard limits on energy trading going into the last 3 days of trading, so at the delivery point or expiration of the contract. So there's many people, not many, a handful, so I don't want to get carried away with this, in Washington that believe that the speculator has taken the market up to levels it shouldn't go to, even though they won't pay a bit of attention to the price of an ounce of gold that's gone to $1,050 an ounce, which is another inflationary product. But that's okay. It's all about WTI or Brent. So we get it, and instead of having the government come forward to try to put hard limits like we have in our enumerated commodities such as corn, soybeans, or wheat, which are basically formula that the government comes up with and we can only go to a certain level of trading in them, we're going to impose the same thing on our energy complex as long as everybody else has to abide by the same rules, so as long as our competition has to abide by it. We believe that we can come up with limits that make sense, that don't limit the participation in our marketplace and literally drive markets from the regulated platform to the unregulated platform. One of the things that we have, and I hate to elaborate like this, I apologize, but one of the things that we have said to the government is you're coming forward with hard limits and your concern is the price of energy, that these people shouldn't be in the market to the levels they're in. We try to explain to them, just because they're not in a regulated market doesn't mean they can't have access to energy, and they will get access to energy. So what you're doing basically is taking more people off the regulated market, putting them in the dark pools,
and that doesn't help anyone's situation. So we're pointing that out, but at the same time, we understand that there are some politics involved, so we're coming forward with hard limits on our own. So the basically the last 3 days that we have of hard limits today will eliminate the accountability levels and will impose the hard limits throughout the entire curve of the contract. The total outstanding futures contracts, yes.
There'll be a limit then?
There'll be a limit,
at which point no more trades can be done?
Well, first of all, the limit, a large part of our base doesn't butt up against what we call the accountability levels today or even the hard limits going into expiration today. So it's only a small universe of participants. So we don't believe that we're going to affect anybody's risk management needs by having the hard limits imposed through the entire curve, because most of the client base does not trade to a level that would impact the hard limits regardless.
Keith.
Keith Bradshaw, New York Times. To what extent are you seeing that transactions being not necessarily pushed to unregulated markets, but also, or to unregulated transactions, but also overseas, particularly to Asia? And as a related question, given that Asia seems to be emerging with the liquidity and the commodities demand and so forth from this recession better than any other market, how do you see CME expanding here in this region?
Well, first, we are seeing people that were trading on CME NYMEX that feel that they're trying to get ahead of the government, so they're coming up with look-alike products to mimic some of the energy products, like a tracker on a WTI, or other products that they're creating just so they won't come under the regulation of the government. So we told our government this could happen. These folks are actually putting out press releases that they're doing it. So I don't know what more we need to tell our government that people actually have an alternative to the regulated market when the people that are doing it are actually putting out their own press releases. So it's clear that that is truly happening. As far as our expansion into Asia, Keith, I think, was the second part. You know, I'm excited by the region. You know, you look at the growth of the hedge funds that are coming to Hong Kong, that are coming to Singapore. The money that's coming into this region is truly outpacing the rest of the world. I don't think that's a secret. You can see it. I think a lot of you folks in here are writing about the influx of cash coming into this region. We're going to participate in that. CME Group is going to participate. We are going to be very aggressive in this region. We have spent a lot of years building good relationships throughout Asia, and we are going to devote more resources to this part of the world. It only makes sense. We call ourselves a global company. We are truly going to be a global company. We are in 85 countries around the world today distributing our product, but we are going to have a larger presence in here in Asia. So whether that means doing more partnerships like we did with the Korean Exchange or the Malaysian Exchange, we have signed MOUs in the past, and an MOU is an MOU. We've actually done some real commercial transactions as of late, and we're going to continue down that path to expand our business. So we're excited about the growth in Asia. We were talking a little bit earlier about regulation, and one of the things that I've learned a little bit, and I have more meetings throughout this week, is government seems to be more receptive to business, and it doesn't mean they're more receptive to unregulated business in Asia, but they're more receptive of giving business a direction of what government's going to look like over the next several years. So you're not going to be held hostage to a potential vote 2 weeks after you just put on a transaction that's going to change the rules of the game that could influence the cost of doing business. And I think that's very important, and I think business recognizes that, and I think so that's what's going to help continue to grow Asia. So again, we want to be a part of that.
Thank you.
Thanks, Keith.
Eric.
Eric Floyd. I'm with Osria, an investor membership organization here in Asia. Kind of a big naive question. We just went through the Great Recession. Now the regulators, of course, are jumping in with proposed reforms all over the place, including derivatives. But in terms of what happened in the past year, where the crisis originated, I'm not quite certain what the connection is to derivatives. If I understand it right, essentially what happened is that mortgage-backed securities proved to be a problem, and the people who were selling these securities sold them to investors who didn't know what they were buying, or they figured out ways to move them off their balance sheet but kept them on their balance sheet indirectly. And ultimately, it was a problem about banks that had no net worth and were insolvent. I guess as an extension of that, the way the derivatives come in is you suddenly have a huge contraction in liquidity, and that means that you have counterparty risk with counterparties that don't have liquidity. So the question is, if we had had more exchange-traded derivative trading, we'd have still have had the crisis, right? But basically, you're arguing that we would have had a less severe crisis, perhaps? Or are you really a secondary or third, tertiary issue here? But at the end of the day, in terms of the reform we need, the reforms are elsewhere.
Well, I think, Eric, you answered a lot of your questions in your question, so I don't think it was a naive question. Very thoughtful question. As far as derivatives causing the crisis, it wasn't derivatives causing the crisis, obviously. And it definitely wasn't exchange-traded derivatives causing the crisis. It was lending practices that caused the crisis. It was leverage. It was greed that caused the crisis. The mortgage-backed securities definitely caused the crisis. That's not a euro-dollar contract or an equity contract traded on the CME Group or any other exchange throughout Asia or the rest of the world. So that's what caused the crisis. I don't know if the crisis is over, and what our point is, as far as could we have helped with it, I believe we could, because we don't let losses accumulate. So when you say if we would have had more trading of exchange products, would the crisis have been less? We're not saying that. If we had more clearing of OTC products, I definitely think the crisis would have been less, because we never would have let these losses accumulate the way we do. As I said earlier, we do a twice-daily mark-to-market system, so it's a zero-debt system. If we were to be clearing over-the-counter standardized transactions, those losses never would have accumulated. So the AIG losses could not have accumulated in CME's clearinghouses. So that's why we think we have a huge value to add in the chain, and that's why I think that there will be some capital incentives and others for people to clear business on regulated futures exchanges, but I don't see that anybody's going to mandate that we trade these products on a regulated futures exchange. So that's where I try to draw the difference. We couldn't stop it. We can't stop someone wanting to pay $1 million for a house in Singapore, and the next day somebody wants to pay $2 million for it, and $3 million, we turn it into an auction, off it goes, and then all of a sudden the pool of liquidity dries up, and the next guy's got to sell it for $500,000. We got a problem because it's leveraged to $3 million. So you do that throughout the world, we're going to have a crisis, and it's just that's ebbs and flows of markets. But the bad lending practices and some of the losses that accumulated with either mortgage-backed securities or interest rate swaps, things of that nature, we think that we could have helped mitigate that risk. We already know that the credit default swaps market at the peak was around $70 trillion. In our clearinghouse, in our models that we've looked at, we knew that we could take that risk factor by down by five times, just with the current $70 trillion of exposures, just by netting out those exposures. But, obviously they were not cleared. So, thanks, Eric.
In front, please, and then.
Thanks very much. I'm David Spencer from Emerald Hill. I'm curious, as your markets continue to get larger and more sophisticated, as you look out at A, regulators, and B, legislators, how do you view their role, and how do you view yourselves to constructively work with people who are arguably less focused, less deep, less sophisticated, well-intentioned, and less well-compensated than maybe the people who work on your exchanges every day? How do you create a constructive dialogue that helps educate and guide and come up with something that is truly a free market for business, but also to some degree helps the public good as well?
David, that's a great question, and it is a very delicate process, because you're absolutely right. Because take position limits for an example. The Commodity Futures Trading Commission, under its statute, has the ability to insert position limits. They absolutely have no experience in putting forward position limits. So how do you work with them in a constructive way for the good of everybody to do it? They're going to do something, so they have no experience, so we try to help them. How do we help them? We create a white paper with what we believe is appropriate position limits, going back to the gentleman's question earlier. It is a difficult, difficult process. Legislators, there are others that are trying to create laws for a futures business in the United States, where one company owns 98% of the futures market. CME Group owns 98% of the futures market. So we're going to create competition for 98% of the futures market. I'm not competing in the United States of America. We're 40% of the global futures business, and we're 15% of the global over-the-counter derivatives business. So you can see how we continually go down. We're competing against the world. Where in U.S. securities exchanges, they are truly competing amongst each other in the United States. You can't list U.S. securities on a foreign exchange and conversely back and forth. So the laws are completely different. It's a very difficult education process in Washington. We have been in Washington, D.C., educating lawmakers and regulators for many years. We're a 160-year-old company, so we just didn't come riding into town saying, geez, listen to us. I think our credibility is high. Our credibility is also high because what I said earlier in my prepared remarks, we have never had a default of a customer due to a counterparty risk at the CME Group. I think regulators get that. So one of the reasons, or one of the time periods, I think, that the regulatory reform legislation, for lack of a better term, has not come out yet is because I think people are trying to get their arms around this. They're trying to understand it. They're trying to understand that the CME Group and other exchanges, they compete around the world. They don't just compete with the old Chicago Board of Trade, which was six blocks away, or with the New York Mercantile Exchange, you know, a couple hundred miles away. Those days aren't, they're gone. We're competing with the world. So they're starting to understand that, and I think that's one of the reasons why reg reform has not been passed, because I don't believe there's one person in this room a year ago would have said to yourselves, I don't think we're going to have anything come out of Washington for about a year and a half now. You all would have thought that we would have passed legislation probably by last November at the latest. Everybody did. It didn't happen because they have to educate themselves because they understand, in my opinion, the moves they make now could be detrimental to the future of the United States.
And if I might just follow up briefly, you mentioned that you were in Singapore. I'm just curious, given the different structure of the bureaucracy and regulatory body there, the pay grades that they're famous for, do you see any difference, and does that show up materially in your type of interaction with the government there?
No, and again, I'm not an expert, and I could turn the mic over to my friend Mr. Gill, who is more of an expert on that. The one thing I will say about the Singaporean government is they're very receptive towards business, and I think they want to work with business. As I said earlier, they're not trying to put up stumbling blocks or roadblocks. If they're going to commit to laws and regulations in Singapore, I think they're going to commit to them because they're well thought out. They're not going to try and change them every 6 weeks or 6 months, or at least be in your newspaper saying that we're thinking about doing it. One of the things that hurts trade is if you're trying to put on a forward contract 6 months or 6 years down the road on a curve, you're concerned about doing it because if you put that transaction on and all of a sudden Washington decides they're going to change the laws, the impact could be billions of dollars to you and you can't get out of that transaction because it's priced for 2 years down the road and all of a sudden our government did something different. I think in Singapore they recognize that business needs a plan, so they don't do that to business, or at least you don't see it in the press. Mr. Gill, I might be wrong, but
they don't. The CME has since 1984 enjoyed a very productive relationship with the exchange there, so we're very familiar with the rules and the laws there, and the regulatory environment is such over there, it provides a lot of our clients the comfort to set up shop there. It's just like Hong Kong, I would say. At this time, there's a very large concentration of our clients there, largely because of the regulatory environment. It provides a certainty that you don't quite get in most places currently.
Thank you. Can we go back to the question at this table?
Robin Fox. Do you agree there's a market for a global cash equity market? And would Globex consider extending its operations from energy and commodity derivatives to cash equities globally?
Well, first of all, I'm a big believer in doing something that you're good at, and we're good at listed derivative futures, and we're good at clearing. I think we'd be very good at over-the-counter clearing of derivative products. They have a global cash equity market. I think is a very interesting concept, but one of the reasons why I don't think it'll come to fruition is because of high correlation among equity products, same reason you have high correlation among government debt products and high correlation among other products listed in countries. So the need or the demand for a global equity product probably isn't there because you can manage risk in the Stoxx 50 or the Bund, you know, with euro dollars or with S&P 500. So you know, the correlation rates are very, very high. So I don't see that as something, a big demand for it.
If I could throw one in here, Terry, ownership of exchanges in this part of the world, even in supposedly free market loving Hong Kong, is something that's very, very sensitive to a lot of governments. And I remember talking with Gil and some of your chief executive when he was out here last month about the hubs you create around the world. And I think you just mentioned in your speech that these allow you basically to bring the market participants back to Chicago really fast, really efficiently. That doesn't sound to me like something that the Chinese government would like to hear. As you look to establish a meaningful presence in China, what are the options working with the government and parties there, or do you see really no opportunities at the moment?
No, I definitely see opportunities, and I think the appetite to manage risk in all products is going to continue to be more global, and I don't see how China is going to stay out of that equation. So right now, China, as you folks know better than I, is managing risk in commodity-type products. I do think that as their economy evolves, they're going to look for other ways to diversify their risk, and the only way to do that most efficiently and effectively is to do it in financial futures and do it in stock index futures. So I see that becoming a part of their financial makeup eventually. The question is when, and CME Group is definitely well-positioned to work with Chinese exchanges, as it has, you know, shown it could work with Malaysian exchanges and with other institutions around Asia. So I like the opportunity. Is it going to be a challenge? Absolutely. But I don't think that we've got to where we're at today if we didn't have challenges. So innovation's part of our lifeblood, and I think we can come up with innovative ways to work with the Chinese government to help them list product, whether it be commercially or otherwise.
I think we can take at least one more question if there's another in the audience right here. Jean?
Jean from Forbes Asia. I wonder whether you have any advice to regulators in the region about how to deal with the rise of dark pool. Did you see any danger here?
So, I'm sorry, Jean. Advice for the regulator on what?
The dark pool.
Dark pools.
Singapore was announced one.
Yeah. You know, I'm about transparency. I think transparency is helpful, and I think people want transparency. I understand dark pools, and there's certain types of businesses that are going to be done in that way. You know, there's products in this room that are so customized in nature that you and I probably don't need to be a partake in, but I'm a big believer in transparency. I think it suits everyone's needs. It's just helpful. I think the deeper pools of liquidity we have are much more cost effective for folks. So the more times you fragment liquidity, so you put them in dark pools, you put them in regulated pools, you put them in different places, and you're trading the same product, I don't believe you get the best price. So I'm a big believer in, you know, concentration of liquidity to suit the risk management needs of the user. So I don't have the great answer for dark pools, because there are, again, certain products where they actually make sense. But I said to somebody earlier that it's kind of strange how they have a name dark next to their pool of liquidity. It's just kind of a strange name for liquidity. It just sounds a little anonymous at best.
We can take one last question if there is one. Sorry.
Joe Marsh, Asian Investor Magazine. Talking about liquidity again, given the relatively fragmented nature of the markets in Asia, do you ever foresee a sort of a more dominant two or three exchanges for, say, interest rate derivatives or energy, or do you think it's always going to be sort of more local markets than in, say, Europe, for example?
Well, I think when you look at the consolidation of marketplaces in the United States and in Europe, and in Asia, I think that there's been some concentration of exchanges. I don't see how that doesn't continue, because, again, I think it helps keep the pools of liquidity tight. That being said, it's such a unique business that I think people will constantly try to innovate and get into the exchange business. And I think that's healthy for the business. So I don't ever see it becoming, you know, like forgive me for saying, like a Walmart model, if that makes any sense to the folks in here, where it's just a dominated store for a one-shop stopping. But I do think exchanges are going to continue to grow, and but at the same time, they'll probably continue to consolidate.
Great. Thank you very much. Terry, appreciate you coming here today, and we look forward to having you back as you'll be coming to the region a lot more frequently in future. Please join me in thanking Terry.
Thank you.
And as is our custom here, I try and keep my head close to the mic while I fish around for a present. We've managed to get a tape of the St. Louis L.A. game for you. Not going to tell you the result, but
all right.
Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, guys.